Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the first day of January 2022. And if people continue to wake up, hopefully it'll be a less tyrannical year than the one just finished. I'm your host, Mark Call. In a normal year, no such thing anymore, the week just passed would have been fairly quiet, but with the waste stream sensors taken this week off, things are slipping out that might not otherwise have. So we'll start with this mostly ignored story, courtesy of Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. CDC admits, says his headline, that the COVID pandemic was the product of, and he says, an inappropriate test. I'm going to be more blunt and say it's a BS-laden bunch of crap test. Quietly, though, says Dr. Roberts, and without media attention, the Centers for Death and Control, the CDC, have withdrawn the PCR process as what they call a valid test for detecting and identifying SARS-CoV-2. Here's the quote. As of the end of this week, after December 31, 2021, CDC will withdraw the request for the U.S. Federal Death Administration, FDA, for emergency use authorization of the CDC 2019 novel coronavirus real-time RT-PCR diagnostic panel. And they admit the reason is because the PCR test just can't differentiate between SARS-CoV-2 and your garden variety influenza viruses. Which, of course, goes a long way to explaining how come flu went to zero while the booga booga variant of the flu went through the roof. And no, it can't tell a Delta variant from an Omicron or a sniffle either. Says Dr. Roberts, I reported several months back that the so-called health authorities had reached this decision, but were withholding its implementation till the end of this year. They needed the fake test to keep the fear going in order to panic as many people, and therefore get as much profit, into taking the poison poke as possible. Again, he's being too kind. I think there's also a death and genocide agenda on the table here. It's extraordinary, says Dr. Roberts, though, that the CDC's withdrawal of the test received no attention from the media or politicians. Not so, though, from Dr. Kerry Mullis, Nobel laureate and inventor of the PCR process, who said several years ago that the PCR is a process. It doesn't tell you that you're sick, and as others of those who obviously know more about it than the CDC have noted, it was never meant to be a COVID test. Dr. Pascal Sacre, the famous Belgian specialist in critical care, said that the RT-PCR process was misused and applied as a relentless and intentional strategy to create the appearance of a pandemic based on phony test results and not actual COVID patients in order to violate human and constitutional rights of citizens. And as Dr. Roberts and just about everybody else who's ever paid attention to it has noted, the PCR test was run at intentionally high cycle thresholds up until they decided they wanted to change the results anyway, sometime, coincidentally, right around the 20th of January, that were known to produce huge numbers of false positives, meaning that most of the alleged COVID cases were really nothing but intentional fabrications. Hospitals, of course, were part of the deceptive scam because they were incentivized by huge financial rewards to report practically all deaths as COVID, as we saw in other cases, especially over the first year of the pandemic, people that died in everything from car and motorcycle wrecks to gunshot wounds and self-inflicted alcohol deaths were also called COVID fatalities. And let's not forget, it's really easy to do, especially once somebody's dead, because all you have to do is give them a PCR test that produces up to 97% false positives and then declare it, yeah, a COVID death. The question for the human race, suggests Dr. Roberts, is whether they'll figure out just how badly they've been deceived and will they even begin to understand the consequences for human rights and freedom. And I guess what we've seen this week is don't look for the waste stream media to begin to sound any alarms. The close runner-up for most important story of the day, and probably the week, and oh yeah, probably the most disgusting too, is this one, concerning the Federal Aviation Administration, which is again looking the other way when it comes to really important matters like aviation safety, even life and death. They're breaking their own rule, say a number of pieces. The one I'm looking at first comes from Enrico Trigoso at the Epoch Times. The rule that says that pilots shouldn't fly after having taken medications that have been approved for less than a year. This according to a group of attorneys, doctors, and other experts, including pilots, who say that their careers have been ended due to adverse reactions from the not vaccine, a.k.a. the Zyklon B poke. Some, your host interjects here, have had a lot more than just their careers ended. Airlines, which are government contractors, aka public-private partners, have been affected by the Biden-Führer's order, Achtung, dating from September, that states all employees of those companies must be vaccinated or else. Meanwhile, a group of attorneys and doctors wrote a letter directed at the FAA, the DOT, and the Department of Justice, as well as a number of airlines, demanding that they flag all of those so-called vaccinated pilots who've taken the Zyklon B injection and have them re-examined for blood clotting problems, as well as their cardiac health. And once upon a time, folks, you'd have thought that the FAA might have cared about their medical fitness to fly. Says the letter, the Federal Aviation Agency is charged with ensuring the safety, sick, of the flying public. Instead, as we speak, the FAA, as well as the commercial airline companies, are acting in contravention of their own Federal Aviation Regulations and associated guidance, which tells medical examiners to not issue medical certifications to pilots using non-FDA-approved products. Huh? As human rights attorney and primary author of the letter, Lee Dundas, told the Epoch Times via email. The title of the section, the attorney noted, says, literally, do not issue, do not fly, and then instructs medical examiners not to issue medical certifications to pilots using products that the FAA approved less than 12 months ago. These pilots are flying with products which are not even recently approved in violation of the direct wording, and they are flying with injections in their bodies which were never approved by the FDA at all. Because remember, folks, there has been no COVID so-called vaccine commercially available in the U.S., at least. That might not be what you've heard on the criminally negligent networks, obviously, which have received actual FDA approval. And no, in this case, we're not even talking about the lying half-ass slam dunk that they tried to call an approval and have been lying so disgustingly about the test data for. And folks, anybody, including yours truly, who's ever had an FAA medical exam can tell you that when it comes to some things, they're downright anal retentive. But when it comes to the safety of the flying public, given a whole bunch of pilots that probably aren't fit to drive a car, much less fly a commercial airline, they seem to have dropped the ball, or maybe injected the ball, and a whole bunch of other crap right into people's bloodstreams. One of the signers of the letter is Cody Flint, whose career as a commercial pilot ended after voluntarily taking the poison poke and then experiencing adverse effects. He has no underlying conditions, but is a father of two. The 34-year-old ag pilot doesn't remember how he landed after nearly blacking out in mid-flight, saying he was flying his aircraft when tunnel vision started to kick in, a headache worsened, and at some point during that flight, he decided to pull the plane up and go back, and then felt a, quote, extreme burst of pressure in his ears, whereupon he nearly blacked out, felt dizzy, disoriented, and nauseous, and was shaking uncontrollably. Now, one quick aside here, folks. For those that aren't familiar with commercial agriculture flying, as opposed to, say, commercial airlines, the operations are conducted under different parts of the Federal Aviation Regulations, and actually, Part 135 commercial airline pilot medicals are generally actually more strict, except, obviously, when it comes to politically correct injections. Agricultural pilots, however, do generally encounter more difficult flight conditions, and particularly higher G loads, during the normal course of their operations. He said he was at first concerned when he saw the FAA's 48-hour no-fly rule after taking the COVID-19 poison poke, and now realizes, 48 hours just wasn't quite long enough. Saying, quote, I find it hard to comprehend how the FAA justified moving the goalposts of safety from one full year of post-marketing safety review to only 2 days. Because the dangers associated with a pilot experiencing a severe adverse reaction from an mRNA-type COVID vaccine, sick, while at the controls of an airplane can be horrifying and deadly, to say the least. Now here, I note that the Gateway Pundit summary of the piece observes that the FAA generally requires at least 1 year of post-marketing experience with any new drug before consideration of that drug for, quote, aeromedical certification purposes. And the reason? That observation period allows time for uncommon but aeromedically significant adverse effects to manifest themselves, unquote. Turns out, what we've seen is that they're being manifestly ignored in certain very, very important cases. Ag pilot Cody Flint added, as a pilot that experienced a tragic and now career-ending adverse reaction to the Pfizer COVID so-called vaccine while actively flying an airplane, I feel I can honestly and credibly speak out about the dangers associated with pilots returning to flight duties too early, or maybe ever, folks, after taking the mRNA-type vaccination. And let me tell you one other thing, folks, that I've noted in decades of flying non-commercial airplanes. Back when the FAA was serious about pilot health, heart issues, the kind of things that are intimately, evidently associated with the COVID-19 Zyklon B injection, were just about the most disqualifying medical thing that most pilots would worry about encountering during their flying career. From there, let's just go to a headline review of some other COVID-19 whopper revelations during an otherwise quiet news week. Here's one from Tyler Durden and Zero Hedge, and also the Center for Death and Control, which has now flagged, didn't hear a lot about this, did you? 89 different cruise ships with COVID-19 cases as of earlier this week, on Tuesday, according to Bloomberg. And wait a minute, aren't they 100% vaxxed? Oh, well. That, of course, is why they have to keep changing the definition of what it means to be fully vaxxed. But we knew that. Why, even some leftists, like Senator Richard Blumenthal, said that cruise ship operators are repeating recent history as petri dishes of COVID-19 infection. Well, folks, at least they can take heart. If the captain of a cruise ship has a heart attack at sea, at least the boat still floats. Big Brother isn't just purging pilots, however, and endangering the flying and even non-flying public. As we've been talking about, they're gutting the military, too, and destroying the unit cohesion and ability to defend the country at the same time. Here's a piece that's also multiply sourced. Zero Hedge has a summary up about how the Marines are being crushed by the Biden vax mandate, but the piece from American Military News is perhaps a bit more concise. Marines are calling Biden's COVID vaccine mandate a purge. Multiple Marines who spoke to Fox News anonymously on Wednesday and still refused to take the poison poke masquerading as a vaccine said the regime is forcing out, quote, the best and the brightest in the military in what they described as a, quote, political purge. One Marine major with more than 17 years on active duty said, quote, there's something fundamentally wrong at this point with our nation's leadership. And I'd have to say that's an understatement, but he is a Marine. We're facing an unconstitutional edict that I think is very targeted as a political purge, taking out some of the best and brightest soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, and Guardians from the Space Force. A lieutenant colonel with more than 19 years on active duty then added that the military was kicking out service members, quote, as fast as they can and as brutally as they can, damaging every Marine as much as they can on the way out. The Marines also said they've been subjected to the military's blanket denial of any religious waivers that reject service members' requests with no consideration and point only to so-called military readiness. And how's that for an in-your-face whopping lie? Fox News said it reviewed 8 letters of denial and all were, well, call them a form letter, folks, boilerplate. Nearly identical. According to data provided to the Washington Examiner on Thursday, 206 Marines so far have been kicked out for refusing to take the poison poke and commit suicide on command. Among active duty Marines, 94% are said to be fully vaccinated, at least whatever that means today. 1% have played vaccine roulette only once, and roughly 9,000 active duty Marines remain, I'm going to put it this way, untainted. In the context we're talking about here, that means with the immune system and all of its glory that God gave them. No religious exceptions, however, not one, have been approved out of 3,247 requests. And at the same time, only just over 1,000 medical or administrative exemptions have been approved. And we know, folks, that every single person who's had COVID-19 should have been approved. Even though the official claim is that the Marines' 3-member Religious Accommodation Review Board, SIC, considers those exemptions on a case-by-case basis.
That's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, we consider them trash. Since there's been a bill signed to prevent the vaccine refusers from being dishonorably discharged, the lowest discharge service members may be separated with is a general discharge under honorable conditions, which still, though, causes them to lose out on benefits, including the GI Bill. And as you might suspect, folks, the Marines, arguably one of the most honorable of the services, particularly when it comes to their oath to the Constitution, also has the lowest official vaccination rate. Here's a headline that just exudes flatulence. It actually comes from RT, but I don't blame them. Consider the subject. Biden reveals condition, it says, for imposing domestic travel vaccine mandate. You ready for this? He will act only on advice from health officials. So start the countdown, folks. world-renowned podcaster and now thorn in the side of the leftist almighty state, Joe Rogan was set to attend a long-anticipated and completely sold-out show in the People's Republic of Canada on the left coast in Vancouver on April 20th, but now it's been canceled because Communist Trudeau's big brother government up there has barred him from entry to his own event. Not to be outdone, communist speech controller Twitter has decided to up their censorship ante after months of providing valuable COVID-19 information that runs counter to the official narrative. They have now banned the inventor of mRNA technology himself, Dr. Robert Malone. And he had over 500,000 followers, too. How dare he think even he can speak up against their official narrative? No longer Great Britain is up in the tyranny ante, too. Door-to-door squads. Now, we've seen it all. We've witnessed the creation of COVID camps, says Jeff Thompson, writing for the Organic Prepper. We've witnessed the American government, sick, hiring internment and resettlement specialists, and he provides links for all of these. We've witnessed once free Australia round up children, separate them from their parents, and then march them into armed men surrounded stadiums to take the poison poke at gunpoint. And now the United Kingdom is gearing up to send door-to-door squads, some might even say death squads, throughout its English-occupied country, which arguably shouldn't surprise anybody at this point, because it's exactly what the conspiracy theorists have been correct about over and over again, and looking at current event stepping stones have said was pretty darn clear for at least 2 years now. America has already gotten a brief taste of what this is like, says the author, but let's consider what it means. Remember how Armenian Christians suffered at the hands of Ottoman Turks? The yellow star of the German Jews has been replaced with the mark of the unvaxxed. Don't even ask about the atrocities in China. Not long ago, people would have said this couldn't possibly happen. Well, here, wherever here happens to be. And now they're wondering, just how far will the death squads go? As if the answer wasn't, well, already, more than painfully obvious. In the UK, there are at least 5 million of the best and brightest who know better than to commit suicide on command, so they're going door to door. Said the evil Boris Johnson, quote, "I'm all in favor of free choice, yeah sure, but there comes a point where you cannot lock up 90% of the country who are vaccinated for the 10% who refuse to be." And there you go. Obviously, that's what door-to-door death squads are for. But now there's this. And you have to ask, is it just possible that ever-tolerant Australians may have finally had enough and decided we're either going to fight or die, and it's time? This comes from the news desk at Hal Turner's radio show. Direct confrontation with the Big Brother government down under broke out early Thursday morning as freedom-loving Australians, are there still some of those left? I guess so, set fire. And maybe that's what a real insurrection starts to look like. To those dumbed-down sycophant nutcases that think January 6th was something along these lines. They set fire to that country's old Parliament House over the tyrannical COVID-19 restrictions, infringements, and outright tyranny that's going on there, along with the coercion of the so-called vaccines. As the old Parliament House burned, protesters warned the present one is next. The story tells us protesters out front said that Big Brother government there has become pure tyranny, gee, do you think, with regard to the outbreak of COVID-19. And now they realize they need to let that government know it'll be forcefully overthrown if it doesn't stop the COVID-19 nonsense. People in Australia have been locked in their homes off and on now for over a year, all over a virus outbreak with a survival rate of at least 99.7%, not much different than a nasty flu, which they can't tell the difference from anyway. And now Australia has imposed vaccine passports, which forbid citizens from eating out in restaurants, going into gyms, attending sporting events, or even forbidding them in some cases from even going into supermarkets to buy food, said one protester. And ironically, folks, if this was America, the FBI would have already put him in the Gitmo gulag outside of the District of Criminal Swamp. Quote, "If government doesn't stop this tyranny, we'll burn down the present Parliament House and hang the elected officials by their necks as they run out of the burning building," unquote. Item, and I'm going to use this to introduce the next couple of stories. The Criminally Negligent Network, the flagship thereof anyway, CNN lost another 38% of their already diminishing viewers, I guess they've finally started to wake up, in 2021. There's barely anyone left, says Zero Hedge's summary, even watching the pedo scandal hit lying bunch of scumbags masquerading as a network. So here are next a couple of stories that you probably wouldn't hear there, even if you were dumbed down enough to listen. From Ethan Huff in Natural News, A Columbia University study has found at least 400,000 people, and we'll get to the other numbers here in a minute, have already died from the so-called COVID vaccines, the Zyklon B poison poke. The true death count from the Wuhan COVID vaccination, and he does put it in quotes, is substantially higher than the lying official figures from the Centers for Death and Control, which claims that only 20,000 people, and that's still more than ever before in all vaccines in history of this country combined, have died from the Fauci flu injections. But Columbia's underreporting factor estimates about 20 times that many, minimum, or around 400,000 deaths, is far more accurate. VAERS, you know the name, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, shows about 20,000 deaths and over 100,000 hospitalizations from the Zyklon B injections. In total, as of December 3rd, they claim about 1 million adverse events, though, logged in conjunction with the not vaccine. But as everyone who knows what VAERS even is knows at this point, VAERS only captures a tiny percentage. A lot of folks, including your host, think the real number is probably about 1% of vaccine-related injuries and deaths. And because of this, actual scientists generally try to use multipliers to estimate a truer count. And an abstract of this latest Columbia University study on COVID injection deaths explains that, quote, accurate estimates of COVID vaccine-induced severe adverse events and death rates are critical if they're actually going to be risk-benefit ratio analyses made of vaccination and the so-called boosters over different age groups. For their research, Columbia scientists used the regional variation in vaccination rates to predict all-cause mortality and non-COVID deaths over subsequent time periods based on two independent, publicly available data sets from both the United States and Europe. Comparing the study's estimated vaccine fatality rate with the rate reported by the CDC, the researchers concluded that VAERS deaths are underreported by a factor of 20. And based on those findings, the Columbia team declared that the risks associated with the China virus injections, including the so-called boosters, quote, outweigh any benefits in children, young adults, and older adults with low occupational risk or previous coronavirus exposure. And all I can add to that is, duh. They further emphasize that there is an urgent need to identify, develop, and disseminate diagnostics and treatments for life-altering vaccine injuries. How about just quitting lying about the ones that already exist, from vitamin D, hydroxychloroquine, and ivermectin to a whole bunch of others? Still, though, the findings from the Columbia study arguably represent a major undercount, because the true death count from the China virus injections are probably even double the 400,000 figure. Steve Kirsch, executive director of the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation, recently conducted analysis comparing anaphylaxis rates published in a study to the rate found by VAERS. And based on this, Kirsch estimates that the true death toll from the shots is likely 41 times higher, or about 820,000. And then using whistleblower data from CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, Kirsch analysis arrives at an underreporting figure of 44.6, suggesting the death toll could still even be higher than the 820,000. In all likelihood, folks, closer to 1 million. In other words, any way you count it, the number of deaths from the so-called vaccines is far, far higher than the number of deaths from the actual virus, even if you count all of those people that were called virus deaths that may have succumbed to gunshots or motorcycle wounds instead. And get this, there are almost no autopsies being done because, as a comment at Natural News notes, an actual autopsy might reveal the spike protein is a synthetic version of HIV, XMRVs, SIV, hepatitis C, with an unusually large collection of graphene oxide in the brains and clotting points. But there are at least a few. Another article from Steve Kirsch via the Burning Platform says that a paper posted December 10th of this year by Sukharit Bhakti, MD, and Arne Burkhard, MD, has been getting a bit of attention lately because they actually autopsied people who were vaccinated after death and confirmed that 93% of them were in fact killed by the vaccine. They autopsied 15 patients who died between 7 days and 6 months after receiving the COVID poke and discovered that in 14 of 15 of them, there was widespread evidence of the body literally attacking itself, something never seen before. And although other organs were attacked as well, the heart was attacked in every single one of those cases. No, the paper hasn't been peer-reviewed, But as the scientists who did read it noted, name withheld to protect him for obvious reasons, we're seeing a disaster of unimaginable proportions. Because each subsequent shot caused more damage to the victim. We'll be right back.
Just like yesterday, then I'll get on my knees and pray.
Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. I am your host, Mark Call, and I guess we'll start this one off with a brief insanity update on the COVID-1984 plandemic and those who were drinking the Kool-Aid. And, of course, staying current on their Zyklon B boosters. At least 14 communist Congress critters have all tested positive for the booga booga flu. Oh, and they're all, of course, fully vaccinated and boosted. And they've all tweeted that they're oh so happy that they took their poison so that, yeah, they got sick. They weren't supposed to, but hey, it's not as bad as we're sure it would have been. And it sounds like they're not only drinking the same Kool-Aid, they're dancing to the tune of the same puppeteer. Each one of them said, I tested positive, but it's a breakthrough case. Seems like we've got a blizzard of breakthrough cases, folks. Oh, yes, my symptoms aren't too bad. Praise St. Fauci and his God-given vaccine. You too should take your poke and get boosted. Because really, who needs an immune system? And while they all sound pretty darn idiotic, this guy may even be right up there with them on the ignorant and proud of it scale. French tennis player Benoit Paire has tested positive for the Fauci flu, COVID-1984, just weeks before the Australian Open. And not to be outdone, he tweeted this. Hey, my name is Benoit Paire, and for the 250th time, I have tested positive for COVID. He said, honestly, I can't deal with this COVID shit anymore. Well, I got a runny nose, but because of all the quarantines he spent in a hotel room halfway around the world, he says, quote, I don't feel good mentally. And guess what? He's not only been poked and re-poked, but, quote, I'm following all the protocols, including isolation, unquote. And it doesn't seem to have made a darn bit of difference. But just maybe, folks, there's a lesson here. At the very least, it leads your host to ask a question I've asked before.
Are you crazy? Or just plain stupid?
Stupid is stupid does, Miss Blue.
I guess.
And I guess while we're on the subject, this kind of fits. Over the weekend, America with a K got one more graphic demonstration of just how stupid the D.C. swamp critters think America must be. The Marionette in Chief and the first nursemaid, Jill, were sitting down on national TV trying to convince kids that, yeah, the senile guy, too, is waiting for Santa Claus. Like the Scarecrow and the Wizard of Oz, maybe all he really wants is a brain. They were tracking him on radar, or so we're told, but I guess compared to his many other lies, that one people are probably willing to let slide. After all, at least nobody died. But the embarrassing moment came when a dad, talking to the royal couple on national TV, ended the call with Merry Christmas and Let's Go Brandon. And the clueless one immediately replied with Let's Go Brandon, I agree. As you could watch Jill trying to smile while wincing through clenched teeth. The video immediately went viral with hundreds of thousands of views, and if you missed it, folks, it went something like this.
Yeah, I hope you guys have a wonderful Christmas as well.
Merry
Christmas, and let's go
Brandon. Let's go Brandon, I agree. Hey, by the way, where are you in Oregon?
I think the White House staff may have cut that fellow off. But at least the waystream media could immediately be counted on to jump to the Biden Fuhrer's defense right after Biden was trolled by an Oregon dad while taking NORAD Santa tracker calls, says the Gateway Pundit summary. NBC News immediately referred to the phrase, Let's Go Brandon, as, quote, a right-wing anti-Biden slur. How dare anybody imply that the communist Chinese puppet is not quite all there? Much less that anybody could have a problem with the kind of tyranny that arguably would make Adolf blush. Oh, yeah, and let's not forget for a minute that it was NBC's incredible in-your-face hypocrisy that actually popularized the phrase as a response to them in the first place. And just in case you missed it, the Gateway Pundit reminds us that the phrase originated when an NBC sports reporter, sick, claiming that a crowd clearly chanting, F Joe Biden, and they used the F word outright, folks, was instead saying, Let's go Brandon, regarding a NASCAR race winner there, Brandon Brown, at Talladega. Yeah, sure. And if you believe that, I've got a nice Zyklon B injection for your kid. Investigative journalist Jack Posobiec, not fooled, actually tweeted out a picture of his Christmas tree with packages under it, wrapped in festive-looking paper, all of which said, "Let's go, Brandon." I guess nobody there was fooled. It's a joke, and everybody gets it, except the liars and the senile, and arguably those who are both.
Let's go, Brandon. I agree.
Well, for once, so do I. And it would seem, so does the White House, although they're not about to admit it. The Biden Fuhrer is senile, the White House knows it, and so does almost everybody in America except the Waystream Press, who's so good at lying by now they may even believe their own whoppers. White House staff cut short press coverage of Biden's video call with the troops overseas. After the latest Let's Go Brandon fiasco, the press was asked to leave, says the Gateway Pundit's coverage, after just 5 minutes before the back-and-forth exchange with the troops began because, uh-oh, well, maybe it's obvious at this point, although it's typically a half-hour public event. Not to be outdone, Satan's garden gnome, America's own Dr. Mengele, was hard at it over the weekend, continuing the goose step towards tyranny. Now he says that American travelers, sick, should expect to wear masks forever, you little slaves, you, on all commercial air travel. Apparently, says Tyler Durden and Zero Hedge in their coverage, getting triple vaxxed or the coming fourth jab, discussions are already underway, is just not enough. So when it comes to masks and air travel for the slaves, Fauci is signaling clearly there will never be any end. And then after threatening that the peons wouldn't even be allowed to fly without taking the poison poke, he topped it off with this.
So, I mean, anything that could get people more vaccinated would be welcome.
So evidently, he's not ruling out concentration camps either. Given the kind of year that it's been, I'm going to do something quite a bit different this evening than I usually do. But it still has to do with connecting some dots, the kind of dots that people normally don't seem to want to talk about, much less connect. And if as a result some of those conclusions offend people, well then great, because the consequences, let me put this as kindly as I can, sure as hell do. I've said this for quite a while, but I think in the current context, it's pretty much undeniable. There are people working really, really hard to create a hell on earth, and they have been pretty blankety-blanking successful. I'll introduce this next series of stories with another observation that I've made more than once over the last few years. If you're looking for a unified team that pretty well describes exactly how they've accomplished this amazing feat, look no further than the Bible itself. You take that which the Creator says, do, and they say, no, don't, and vice versa. But it goes well beyond that. You take that which He says is abomination, and they say, oh no, it's better than what was once called right or natural. Not only are we going to encourage it, subsidize it, and we'll take your money by force to do that, we're going to teach it to your children, and if you don't like it, we're going to punish you criminally. In other words, and I think I read this somewhere, they're going to call evil good and good evil, and replace bitter for sweet. And the fruit of that wicked tree, as you might suspect, is really, really bitter. They started, of course, among many, many other things, by saying it's okay to kill kids, at least early on, while they're still barely in the womb. Some of you might be old enough to remember when abortion should be safe, legal, and rare. Well, then it was the second trimester, then the third trimester, and then, oh yeah, we can harvest some baby parts, ain't that grand, and in the process, maybe I can buy a new Lamborghini. Abortion is now the sacrament to decide whether or not you're a good enough high priest to wear the black robes of the Supreme Court. In other words, they call it a litmus test, but you get the idea. What it really is, folks, is a sacrament. And if you pull back the covers, what they're really talking about is a church. It's basically universal. You can't be a good swamp critter unless you worship at that altar, and it sure as hell ain't holy. And that's basically just one set of examples among so many that maybe you could call them legion. And yeah, most Congress critters won't even understand that reference. But where I'm headed specifically are a couple items that'll hopefully surprise more than a few people, especially those who have been indoctrinated by this New World Order church. And the real point here, if you'll stay with me, is that it's a lot more insidious and thus more subtle and a lot more all-pervasive than most people would even begin to want to recognize. Maybe you've heard the analogy before. In some respects, it's a bit like trying to explain water to a fish. It just is. It's all around us. Well, I don't even think I can imagine life without it. So here we go. This next piece is a story by a fellow that I generally think has his head more or less screwed on right, Dennis Prager. In this case, he wrote it for WorldNetDaily.com. It's been repeated in a number of places on the web. And it's about the so-called transgender swimmer, Leah Thomas. He says, and I don't disagree at all, Leah Thomas is a cheat, period. The trouble is, there seems to be a whole lot of water here. the dentist is kind of oblivious to. He begins by talking about the incredible number of moral, intellectual, and legal absurdities that people have more or less been swimming in for so long, they've become oblivious to them. Having fewer police leads to a decrease in violent crime, he says, is one. Men give birth and have a cervix and so forth is obviously another. There are certainly countless others. Criminals disobey laws. Well, except gun control laws, of course. Vaccines always work, unless there's one person out of a dozen that doesn't take it, in which case, booga, 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 everybody's gonna die, and so forth and so on. In any case, but perhaps, writes Dennis Prager, the most obvious moral and intellectual absurdity of all, and we'll go with him on this at least for a minute, is the notion that Leah Thomas, a male member of the University of Pennsylvania's women's swim team, won fairly in the team's recent meet against Cornell University and their women's swim team. Because, you see, Leah Thomas was a man. Well, allegedly, at least until 2 years ago, when he announced that she is really a woman. Now, at this point, I'm going to take issue with it up front, but I'm going to say, please pay careful attention, because this is a place we're going to come back to, writes Dennis Prager. Now, neither I nor most fair-minded people care if Leah Thomas considers herself a woman. Many of us are even prepared to refer to Leah as she, especially if she dresses, acts, and looks like a woman. For the record, he says, parenthetically at this point, most people who watched Leah's interview online didn't know that she actually claims to be a woman and would probably assume otherwise that they were watching a man. But no fair-minded person, he says, can accept that Leah should be allowed to join a women's swim team and compete against female teammates and against other women's swim teams. Because the fact that Leah wishes to be considered a woman is entirely irrelevant to the question of whether or not it is at all fair for this individual to compete against women. As far as sports are concerned, one's biology, not one's gender identity, is all that matters. Unquote, and yeah, full stop. I'm going to suggest here that there's far more to it. Back to that water thing again. And that's not to discount Prager's point. It's more to say that he's missing the real one, the elephant in the room, or well, maybe the water-filled living room, in fact, with a great big old whale sitting there on the couch instead of an elephant. And it's possible you've heard people say things like this along the same lines before. I don't care what someone does in the privacy of their own home. Well, of course, this is hardly the privacy of their own home. And it's increasingly impossible to argue that there isn't quite a bit of coercion involved here to make you accept what they want to proclaim themselves to be, whether you, or maybe even more importantly, your God, likes it or not. And I guess, folks, that leads me to suggest I don't really care whether somebody who can't tell the difference between an innie and an outie considers me fair-minded or not. And honestly, you know, I really don't care all that much about women's NCAA swim records. Although I can appreciate why women who worked and trained hard and competed for years to set those records just might. So I'll let Dennis Prager complete his point. If Leah or any other biological male is allowed to compete against biological women, women's sports are rendered pointless and therefore unnecessary. Because the entire reason women's sports exist is to enable women to compete against, well, other women. Because males have an innate physical advantage in virtually every sport. And needless to say, so-called female Leah Thomas has broken numerous University of Pennsylvania women's sick swim records. And in his recent 1,650-meter freestyle win, sick, Thomas beat the second-place finisher and his teammate by more than 38 seconds, literally obliterating the field of actual women. And all of this, he suggests, means that the real women who once held those records no longer hold them. They've been stripped of their records because the University of Pennsylvania, like other universities, and there's a real irony for you folks, allows biological men to claim that they're women and then join women's swim teams. That's the ruling of the woke cowards, he suggests, of the NCAA, who have decreed that all women's sports teams in all sports are no longer for actual women because men must be allowed to compete and destroy them any which way they can. All a man has to do to compete against women is announce that he is a woman and take testosterone suppressors for a year. I guess he doesn't even have to actually whack off any biological parts he might change his mind about later. Here's where I really part company, though, although not with the sentiment. It's revolting, he says, and he's right, that LGBTQ activists and virtually all sports writers, a band of sheep if there ever were one, and pretty much the entire woke left, claim this is fair. And I gotta admit, folks, although this is not the reason I'm doing the story, when I read crap like that, I hear the whiners saying, it's not fair, it's not fair. And it makes me want to say things to them like, well, why don't you go pick up your ball then and play with people who know what the game really is? You knew they were crooks. You knew it was rigged. You knew you were going to get ripped off. So what are you complaining about? So let me say this again. The fact that people believe this is somehow only about sports is really sad. And far more importantly, dangerous to boot. And with that in mind, some of the headlines that Prager quotes next, in order to make his point, I'll suggest really help make mine. Here's one from The Hill. College swimming champion Leah Thomas targeted by transphobic rhetoric. And yeah, it's funny because they're ignorant too. Whoever wrote that doesn't even know what a phobia actually is. The far-left misnamed Human Rights Campaign defended Mr. Thomas, saying, quote, living your truth is an incredible and powerful feeling. We're in solidarity with Leah and all athletes who compete in the sports they love on teams consistent with their gender identity, unquote. And here I'm back in agreement with Prager, who says the ability of people to lie to themselves is a depressing fact of life. Up until he makes this claim, the fact is this issue has nothing to do with trans acceptance or transphobia. It's purely a moral question. Is it fair? Fair is for ninnies. The moral question always asks, is it right or wrong? And let's be honest here. A big part of the answer to that question depends on who gets to decide. And let me suggest this. If it's the same satanic entity that gets to tell you whether it's fair or not, you've already lost on every front. Which brings me more or less back to the water in the room, or you could say the creator of both the water and the air that was supposed to have been in the room. Is something right or wrong? Is there a real standard of morality? Or if I'm just bigger than you, can I take your stuff, inject you with anything I damn well want to stick into your veins, or for that matter, your kids' veins, and kill you? And then it'll be easier to take your stuff. You could even ask it this way. Is there even a point in having a written law if those who are supposed to read it can't, and those who don't bother pretend like it doesn't matter what was actually written down in genuine print anyway? And we've been seeing the wicked fruit of that now for decades. Your host has certainly taught the history and the foundation for what was once called the written law for a long time. Before wokeness and the asinine stupidity of political correctness, and let's be honest here, a satanic twist on the whole thing to the point where evil is now called good and good evil, Americans agreed, unanimously even, that there were such things as self-evident truths. And they came from the very place that our God-given, once constitutionally protected rights did, the Creator himself. Oh yeah, and that to secure these rights, and as the foundation for law, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. So I think it's fair to ask, in this context, are you giving your consent to evil? Are you going to say, it's just not fair, it's just not fair? Or are you going to say, I withdraw consent? No, I won't commit suicide on command, and no, I won't let you kill my kids either, or even let you teach them lies that'll get them killed just as certainly. The founders knew that what they unanimously called the Holy Scriptures was the foundation of law. If you go back and look at the committees of correspondence, for example, you'll see that the book of Deuteronomy, that one single book out of the Bible, was quoted more than anything else in the entire founding era. And it was ultimately the basis of the common law incorporated into the Constitution by reference as well. And I hope, folks, that'll help explain why those who have destroyed so successfully the rule of law started with taking literally every single thing that the Creator says is good and that one should do and saying, no, we're not going to let you do it, then turning it on its head and saying, oh, yeah, and those things he says don't do, from thou shalt not steal and thou shalt not murder to, oh, yeah, a man lying with a man as with a woman is an abomination. We're going to require, we're going to mandate, and oh yeah, if he calls it an abomination, we're going to subsidize it and teach it to your kids. And gee, maybe eventually they'll say no fair-minded person could possibly object to anything like that. Which takes me now back to this line from Dennis Prager's piece that I told you to pay special attention to the first time around, where he said, now, neither I nor most fair-minded people care if Leah Thomas considers, and I'm going to change this word back to what it should have been, himself a woman. Many of us, he continued, are even prepared to refer to Leah as she, especially if, he dresses, acts, and looks like a woman. So I'll ask the question, not just is it right or is it wrong, but yeah, does it matter? Does it matter we've raised an entire generation of people who not only are unable to tell the difference, don't know what is right and what is wrong, and don't know how to tell the difference, but can't even recognize when they're being lied to their face? No wonder they accept their slavery like such docile, brainless sheeple. They wear their face muzzles. And when they're told to line up and take the poison poke, bah, bah, yes, thank you, master, may I have another? And then another, and another, and oh yeah, another. And they do, and they die. Is it because they can't recognize such simple truths like male and female, he created them, and in his image besides? Or is what we're seeing now just the culmination of a whole bunch of people for generations being unable to recognize cause and effect? In other words, let me put it this way. Does it really matter that we've got an entire armed services, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, and who knows how many others that probably won't be around much longer anyway, that can't tell the difference between a man and a woman? While the Russian President Vladimir Putin can, he said, a woman is a woman, a man is a man, and he vowed to protect Russia from the gender obscuritanism of a dumbed-down, decrepit West that can't even face obvious truths that once every kindergartner would have looked up at the idiots now in command of the military and said, are you stupid or just plain crazy? Let me say this as kindly as I can. I don't care whether Leah Thomas self-identifies as a woman or a spotted owl. But I do know what Scripture says, and thus, whether he likes it or not, what is right and what is wrong. And I know, to paraphrase Joshua, that as for me and my house, we will serve him, and not a bunch of satanic liars who try to call evil good and good evil. And oh yeah, destroy your children and your children's children too in the process. And that brings me back to the reason that I take such issue with the whale swimming in the water in the middle of the room. Is there anything wrong with being so-called fair-minded, allowing your kids to be taught that, oh yeah, if somebody with a penis wants to put on women's clothing, claim they're a man, and bust women's swimming and track records all to smithereens, that's just fine. And besides, who possibly could care what the Bible has to say anyway? We've moved way, way beyond merely thou shalt not steal and thou shalt not kill. But I would encourage you to read, even study, and certainly consider something that the waste stream sycophants aren't ever going to even acknowledge you ought to pay any attention to. The book of Deuteronomy, chapter 22, verse 5. It's in a sequence of things that would have once been called the very basis for the common law, from the idea of property ownership and bailment to the concepts that underlie marriage. And it says the following. A woman shall not wear that which pertains unto a man, nor shall a man put on a woman's garment, for whosoever does these things, and listen carefully to this, I think it's an interesting turn of phrase, is an abomination unto Yahuwah. And that's his real name, folks. They even take that out, and they put in capital L-O-R-D instead, as if somehow that makes it less important. Whoever does these things, it says, is an abomination unto Yahuwah, your Elohim, your God. At least he should be. And no, I don't want to hear trivial twistings about, oh, men in Scotland wearing kilts or women wearing pantsuits. I can't help but think, and oh yeah, look at the world and see if this doesn't ring true. The real issue here is outright deception. Men aren't supposed to pretend they're women or vice versa. And do you think just maybe that might include not going the extra few steps and cutting off body parts or taking drugs to make that deceptive appearance even skin deep? This is not rocket science, folks, although I wouldn't trust people that can't tell this kind of difference to build a go-kart. Let me kind of summarize it this way. I'd rather be called not fair-minded, even condemned by them, than called an abomination by him. And finally, why does all of this really, really matter today, especially given that we can kind of see it coming to a head on just about every front you can possibly imagine? Because I guess you could make the case that even if the United States was arguably never really truly all that obedient to the Creator, I mean, really, what nation on earth has been, they obviously weren't so outright rebellious, even contemptuous of him, ever. And no, I don't expect those who can't see cause and effect, who ignore actual science and genuine data and replace it with the high priest of the self-proclaimed I am science, and you know who I'm talking about, to recognize any connection here. They proclaim they believe in the great God of the mRNA vaccine, and yet they really don't believe it works, because if their God really protects them, why are they afraid that somebody else isn't worshiping at their same immune system-destroying altar? And if you think about it, it's obvious they even hate the concept of natural immunity, or that they're fearfully and wonderfully made to fight off diseases, because, ooh, that might mean that male and female he created them too. The repercussions, folks, for denying the very basis for our rule of law, for denying the very basis of creation and biology, and yes, even science, which says that there are such things as cause and effect, and if we will search out the truth, we can actually find it. We can test. We can see the results, and we can then draw conclusions. And oh yeah, we might just find that there are certain reasons why a whole lot of things have been written down for us in genuine print, and if we will follow the logic there too, we'll see that we're far better off when we walk in accord with those things that have been given to us for our blessing than when we try to deny them, turn them on their head, and then pretend like America didn't get exactly what it deserved.